Chapter 29, Concerning What Was Written on the Little Bamboo Rods. To you, Nidong, I send greetings and tidings by the man known as Nowhere at All. I have read what is written on the bamboo rods, and I anxiously wonder whether the message from a past age will bring you good fortune or whether it will ruin you. If I knew you to be of the same mind as myself, I would give you back the book with the pages still blank, instead of filled with an account of what happened almost 500 years ago. If you have courage to read what is terrible, and strength of mind to forget what you have read, then read and judge for yourself. Know, too, that the voice which speaks to you from the grave is that of a descendant of Kabatu Khazar, the brother of Genghis Khan. This is told to you by Ubasha, Duke of the Western Sunnites. Moreover, since nowadays people crane their necks and their eyes jump from their sockets when they see writing on old bamboo rods, I have burned the rods. Thus will confusion be avoided and the great evils which arise from it. Nidong paused, and Good Fortune, who was sitting beside him, said, "Read on, it seems to be a serious matter." "I am wondering," replied Nidong, "whether I have got the willpower to forget which the Duke asks of me. Consider, all of you, what I should do." "There is nothing to consider," said Good Fortune. "Until we know what happened in the Black City, we cannot discuss it." "But the Duke thinks this knowledge might bring misfortune," said Affliction dubiously. "And that is what will happen most certainly. Wherever I am, a first-class misfortune is sure to happen. Hadn't I better go out?" "Let us burn the book, father," pleaded Seven Stars. "Anyone who ever took anything out of the Black City had to die. Otherwise, Nowhere at All would still be alive." "The old wise men of past ages," said Big Tiger, "used to make knots in cords as a means of passing on information. Later, they wrote down what seemed important to them so that it could be kept. Why, then, should there be harm in what is written?" "Bravo!" cried Good Fortune. "And you, Nidong, may safely trust my younger brother, Big Tiger. He has a grandfather who is a wise man. When Big Tiger says something, it is just as if his grandfather, who has the key of knowledge, were speaking. Therefore, you may read the message without hesitation. No harm will come of it." "If that is your opinion," said Nidong, "I see nothing against it. But promise me that you will keep secret what is now revealed concerning Etsina, and this promise must be binding as an oath." "As an oath," repeated Good Fortune and Affliction. "As an oath," said Big Tiger and Christian. "As an oath," whispered Seven Stars softly. "What is Etsina?" asked Christian. "The Black City," Nidong explained, "was called Etsina in the days when it was full of life and gaiety. You can still see traces of the woods which long ago surrounded the town like a ring, a jewel. But the trunks fell from the roots, and they lie there as the dead lay on the evening of the battle in which Etsina ceased to live." Nidong took up the book again, and everyone tried to look less excited than he really was. Christian pretended to be as unconcerned as possible, but his eyes shone. Seven Stars was frightened, and Affliction became a shade paler when Nidong began to read solemnly. "We, Arap-Tan, prince of the Koshut tribe, on the eve of our own destruction and that of our people, make known the following to the people who will come after us. Of all things that begin and end, nothing is more disastrous than war. We have not sought strife with the emperor, yet neither have we avoided it when wisdom counseled that we should do so. Therefore, we accuse ourselves, before the living and before those who shall follow us, of lack of wisdom, and we acknowledge ourselves guilty of the death of the thousands who shall die tomorrow. Etsina will no longer exist when we are gone, for the enemy stands before the gates in tenfold our strength, and the enemy is without pity. A victory will be announced to the emperor." This is what happened. In a fight with a superior enemy, retreat is no shame. After the Battle of Maomu, when our auxiliary troops were failing us, we withdrew within the walls of our city of Etsina. The enemy pursued us, losing men and stores in many battles. We did not force our progress, yet success came to us uncalled for, because we persevered. Therefore, we believed we would be saved from our great peril. The approaches to north, east, and west were cleared of the enemy. Only to the south lay the emperor's army, which withstood all attacks. We therefore sent out scouts to discover the cause of the enemy's invincibility, but it was too late. The Etzen Gaul, which flowed under our walls, ceased to flow the following night. The riverbed dried up, and the wells of the city also became dry. At the same time, the besieging army moved forward, now 10 times stronger than before. By the work of 1,000 times 1,000 slaves and of prisoners of the great battles, the enemy had diverted the river into a new bed. Now the Etzen Gaul flows far away from our city. Then the men and women of Etzina lamented loudly, 10 days have passed since then, and we are surrounded. We deepened our wells. At first they gave some water, but now they have dried up. The pitcher is broken, the well rope is torn, and the slime from the wells can no longer be drunk. Thus it happened, and thus it will happen. Of all the deaths, there is none more shameful than death on the scaffold. Therefore, we shall open the gates at sunset and fight. The wall will fall into the moat. Fire will devour the city. When the sun has set, not a single citizen of Etzina will live and breathe. A victory will be announced to the emperor. Thus we have done, but our deed remains hidden. Into the deepest well that we dug in our despair, we have today thrown all the precious things in Etzina. The silver fountain, which a foreigner wrought for us, we have commanded to be broken into pieces. It rests at the bottom of the shaft. Over it, our merchants threw their silver and golden bars to the amount of 1,000 times 1,000 ounces. The women's jewels and the men's rings followed. Every man who had a ruby on his sword hilt tore it off. Pearls and precious stones disappeared into the well. Finally, we, Areptan, threw in all our gold and the dagger which Kabutu Kassar wore. We filled the well shaft with earth and leveled it down. Traders and strangers of future distant ages will pass by, but the treasures of Etzina rest 40 feet beneath the ground, hidden as the thunder is hidden in the bowels of the earth. Naidong stopped reading. He laid his hand on the book and looked around at his listeners, as if he wanted to search their hearts. "And then," asked Good Fortune, panting, "is that all?" "No, it is not all," answered Naidong calmly. "Read on," urged Good Fortune. "It seems to be a serious matter." "It's about a terrible misfortune," said Affliction. "I knew it would be." "Affliction is right," said Naidong with a sigh. But then a sudden thought seemed to relieve his mind. He smiled, took his hand from the book, and continued. "This it is which remains hidden until the day of discovery. We have resolved not to hinder that day. Therefore, we are not entrusting our words to paper, which perishes. We are writing on the tough writing wood of ancient times and burying it that it may escape the fire. But you, unknown one of a later age, who will lift it from its grave, note this. No evil thought rests on the treasure of Etzina. Seek it beneath the mark, Great Treasure, which we are setting upon this spot. Now there may be doubt in your heart, and you may think these are the words of a man writing with a distraught mind. We therefore show you the way, and give you a sign of good omen, that your zeal may not fail. For you must delve 40 feet into the earth, until the uncertain light of the stars pales before the glitter of the jewels which shall dazzle your eyes. When you enter the city by the northern gate, walk 80 paces ahead, and your foot will stumble against the remains of a stone wall. Bow there, if you will, for there stood our palace. Follow the wall until it turns eastward. We cannot foresee whether you will still find the remains of the wall. Therefore we say, walk on until you find the big round stone, which will lie undisturbed in its place, where the wall bends eastward. It was the base of the silver fountain, and no human hand can lift it. Do not seek the fountain shaft. It is filled up like all the others. From this point, turn eastward. You will perceive the stairs in the city wall. Keep your eye fixed on them and take 20 paces towards them. Then stop and dig until you find a stone slab. It lies only 2 feet deep. On it are engraved the words, "Great treasure is near." Lift the slab and dig 2 feet deeper, and then you will find 10 silver bars. They weigh 1,000 ounces and are a sign that you are on the right track and an encouragement to persevere. Provide yourself with tools and little baskets for drawing up the earth, but above all have with you tried and trusted men who are with you at heart, for you cannot carry through the heavy task alone. Do not turn aside from the path which now leads northward. Walk on until you...
Read on, gasped Good Fortune. This is a serious matter.
There is nothing more to read, said Nai Dong. There are only a few blank pages. The writing has ended. He laid down the book, and they could all see a tear in the thin rice paper where a loose leaf had become detached. Here, said Nai Dong, putting his finger on the binding thread, hung the treasure of Etsina, for which a day of discovery will never dawn. Good Fortune groaned. He was simply shattered. This second misfortune of the day seemed almost harder to bear than the first. They all stared in front of them in silence.
You have lost a great deal, Nai Dong, said Good Fortune dejectedly.
Not that I know of, replied Nai Dong. One could not call it a loss.
What? Cried Good Fortune beside himself. You would not call 1,000 times 1,000 ounces of gold and silver a loss, and the pearls and precious stones? Think what you're saying.
I would not have moved a finger to get them, said Nai Dong.
You lie, shouted Good Fortune.
But then he was horrified at his loss of self-control.
Forgive me, he begged. My tongue ran away with me. But it simply cannot be as you say.
But it is, said Nai Dong seriously. No Torgut Mongol will ever disturb the peace of Kara Koto.
We would not have done anything wrong, said Good Fortune.
Wisdom alone would counsel silence and inaction, replied Nai Dong.
Why so? Asked Good Fortune, surprised.
Nobody could dig out a treasure buried 40 foot deep without it becoming known, said Nai Dong. 10,000 robbers would come rushing from all the 8 zones of the earth. Not a Torgut Mongol would survive if that happened. Hence the wind which blew away the page in the valley of dark rushing water saved us from ruin.
But the little treasure, asked Good Fortune obstinately. I mean the 10 silver bars. What about them?
Let us sleep on it, suggested Nai Dong.
Good Fortune was silent for a moment, but then he gave in and said, Bolna. For he hoped that Nai Dong would in time be persuaded at least to dig for the 1,000 ounces of silver.
If the gentleman will allow me, said Affliction timidly, I mean, if I may say something too.
Speak, urged Nai Dong. We shall all have our say.
We should leave well alone, said Affliction in a tone of conviction. Surely somebody else was there ahead of us.
How do you know that? Cried Good Fortune angrily.
That's always the way, said Affliction. Either there was someone there already, or someone will come.
Who would come?
Someone who would take the silver from us.
There's a remedy for that, cried Good Fortune, tapping his pistol holster.
Those remedies don't always hit the mark, said Affliction. Or if they do hit, it's the wrong person who's hit, and nobody is to blame. Good Fortune lapsed into sulky silence on hearing this, but Christian and Big Tiger found it hard to keep from laughing out loud. Nai Dong closed the little silken book and laid it on the chest.
We shall discuss the matter tomorrow, he said.